exercise is one of the single best things you can do for your health, happiness, and well-being. According to the Mayo Clinic, exercise improves mood, fights disease and health conditions, gives you more energy, and promotes better sleep. Working in even a small amount of exercise is one of the best things you can do for your mind and body. And of course, it burns calories. Now, you may have already heard one of the most common maxims of the diet community: you can't outrun your fork. And that's absolutely true. If a 250-pound man goes jogging for 20 minutes, he will burn roughly the number of calories in a side Caesar salad. And that's actually jogging for 20 minutes without stopping. I know that I've been personally guilty of triumphantly writing down an hour of rigorous swimming, when really I was just at the gym for an hour, spent 10 minutes talking to my friend at the front desk, 15 minutes slowly warming up, about 20 minutes rigorously swimming, and 15 minutes taking a breather in the water. Then, of course, if exercise is your primary approach to weight loss, you have to resist the temptation of rewarding yourself with a post-workout snack. Like, for example, a nice, simple, crunchy peanut butter Clif bar, which at 260 calories is almost exactly the amount a 250-pound man would burn by jogging for 20 minutes. Exercise is, at best, a secondary component to weight loss. There's a great article in Vox called "The Science Is In, Exercise Doesn't Help You Lose Much Weight" that I reference a few times in this episode, and the link is in the description and the show notes. It's also important to note that when we expect exercise to help us lose a substantial amount of weight, we're also likely to give up when it doesn't work. And as I said at the top of the show, while you're trying to lose weight by exercising, you are accidentally improving your heart health, longevity, mood, sex drive, etc., etc., etc. Obesity doctor Yuri Friedhoff sums this up nicely. By preventing cancers, improving blood pressure, cholesterol, and sugar, bolstering sleep, attention, energy, and mood, and doing so much more, exercise has indisputably proven itself to be the world's best drug, better than any pharmaceutical product any physician could ever prescribe. Sadly, though, exercise is not a weight loss drug, and so long as we continue to push exercise primarily, and sadly sometimes exclusively, in the name of preventing or treating adult or childhood obesity, we'll also continue to shortchange the public about the genuinely incredible health benefits of exercise and simultaneously misinform them about the realities of long-term weight management. You heard Rich Weil in episode 1, and I originally wanted to have him on because he's overseen the start-to-finish weight loss of hundreds of people. But he's also an exercise physiologist who, according to WebMD, is the author of dozens of articles on exercise and health, and has written or contributed to the exercise chapter of several books, including Time Life's The Gym Workout. On your program's website, under Approach, it says you don't lose a lot of weight with exercise. Why is that?
There's probably three or four good reasons. One is that people overestimate how many calories they're burning through exercise. So let's say they think they've burned 700 calories, or their app tells them that they did. And then they figure, okay, well, I can have that, you know, food, and it'll equal out, or I'll lose weight. And it's overestimating the number of calories. They're probably not burning as many calories as they think they are. And so they make a decision about that. Number two, what happens is sometimes when people exercise, they think that, okay, because I exercise, I don't have to move as much the rest of the day. So this is pretty common in the city. People go to the gym, they'll work out, and then they figure, well, I don't need to walk home because I worked out. So they take the bus or a cab or something like that. And then at the end of the day, after 24 hours, in fact, they haven't burned as many calories as they usually do when they don't work out, right? Another issue is that sometimes people, when they work out, they do get more tired and they nap more. People who are retired, let's say, or people who have an opportunity to take naps, they rest more. And again, then they don't burn as many calories. Sometimes exercise makes people more hungry, and they'll eat in response to that. And they may even do it somewhat unconsciously because they're not aware of how many calories they're consuming. So the answer to that is, if people are hungry after exercise, is to look at when you ate last. We recommend for our folks that they eat every 4 hours or so, because after 4 hours, you're going to be hungry again. Another reason that people don't lose weight with exercise is because they dehydrate a little bit, and then sometimes people eat when they're thirsty. So we recommend for our folks that after exercise, or even during, that they're drinking plenty of fluid. You know, urine should be clear. But if it's not, then if they're thirsty, they may eat first.
Most of the calories we burn in a day come from simply existing and running the body's natural processes. This is commonly referred to as the basal metabolic rate, And according to obesity researcher Alexi Kravitz, it's generally accepted that for most people, the basal metabolic rate accounts for 60 to 80% of total energy expenditure. Digesting food accounts for another 10%, which leaves between 10 and 30% for physical activity. So while Olympic athletes might need 8,000 calories a day to fuel their exercise routines, most of us are only burning between 10 to 30% of our daily calories by exercising plus moving around. Most of our daily calories are going to things like keeping our heart, kidneys, and brain going. A 200-pound 5'6 woman, who is at the highest end of the spectrum, burning 30% of her daily calories from waking up to do cross training and walking to work, still won't be burning off the number of calories in a side of chips and guacamole. She certainly isn't going to get there from just her morning workout. So if our entire calorie deficit is going to come from exercise, we need to exercise a lot, every day. And this has always frustrated me about the just get off the couch brand of weight loss advice. Obviously, it's possible to be overweight and capable of doing an incredible amount of physical activity, look no further than an NFL offensive lineman. But for many of us, starting an exercise routine as a way of losing weight from our most overweight point is incredibly taxing. In a quote for The Guardian, personal trainer Steve Barrett says, "Exercise is stressful for the body. But for those who are severely overweight, their bodies are already stressed. Their blood pressure is already raised. They're already fatigued. Their joints already strained." Since exercise is so important, I wanted to talk to someone who understands how heavy people should begin an exercise routine. And I was lucky to talk to Adam Smotherman, the assistant strength coach for the national champion Clemson Tiger football team. Adam, so the first thing I wanted to ask you about is you deal with a lot of athletes of a lot of different weight levels. And I was wondering if I could ask you about some of the steps that you take to prevent your athletes from getting injured, and especially perhaps, you know, your heavier athletes from getting injured, and what that might imply about someone who is just starting out on how to like build a resilient and injury resistant body when they were just getting into an exercise routine.
Pretty much everything we do starts from a strength standpoint, and I would recommend to anybody that's beginning an exercise program to start with strength. I think a lot of times you see people that have not necessarily exercised or been on a regimented program before, and all of a sudden they hop in, both feet into an advanced program that they really have no business doing because they haven't established a level of strength first. And I don't mean maxing out on the bench press or maxing out on the back squat, but just developing relative strength to your body weight and to your capabilities to be able to hold your body in a stable position, to be able to move your body throughout a full range of motion in a stable position, I think is the key to anybody. And that's what we do with our athletes. When our football players come in as freshmen, we're not maxing them out right out the gate on heavy lifts or technical lifts like Olympic lifts. We're teaching from the get-go, and we're making sure that there is an established base level strength there. We actually do a 6-point analysis, a movement analysis of all our freshman athletes, and every movement is body weight exercises. And we basically just want to make sure that they have the core strength and stability to be able to handle what we're going to put them through. We want to make sure that they have mobility and flexibility in the right areas of their body to be able to do what we're going to put them through. And if they don't, then they're on an alternative plan compared to what everybody else is doing, because our number one priority is safety first and foremost. And I think that that should be the first priority for anybody that's beginning an exercise program is safety. And it should be your priority throughout the duration of your training.
When I first started exercising, when I was like 297 pounds and I had like my first session with a personal trainer, he had me do some like completely unweighted squats, right? So I'm literally just like going down and going back up. And I did, I think, 6 of them, and I was unbelievably, like had trouble getting off the couch sore for like 2 weeks. And I think that there's this lack of knowledge about just how much we need to kind of ease ourselves into that kind of thing when we're you know, weak and out of shape, because I think there's this attitude of like, you know, you need to be running, you need like get off the couch, like what are you doing? But there, I think you're absolutely right that there really is, you know, a need to build up a baseline of strength to be able to do those kind of exercises.
Right, right. I absolutely agree. I think if you haven't ever trained before, you know, some people, I've heard of people, "Oh, I've never squatted before. Let me jump under 225 real quick." Well, you've never done that before. You need to train yourself up for that. And I think where you started was a great point. I mean, you did six bodyweight squats and you were sore because your body had not been accustomed to that training stimulus before. And I'm sure after six, you worked yourself up to 8 or 10 or 12, and
right,
you
exactly.
continued to get better. And as your weight went down, you were squatting less body weight, so it probably got easier and easier. I think people too often try to jump. They try to take a dive into the deep end, you know, and then that kind of spawns discouragement, and they think, oh, this isn't for me. No, it probably is for you. You just didn't necessarily begin the right way.
Right, absolutely. And I want to ask you actually, you know, I think when we begin a strength routine, there's a knowledge that we have to really focus on our form, you know, form when we're first starting out to make sure that we're not injuring ourselves. But I feel like we don't talk about form for cardio exercises. But if you look up like a YouTube video on like running form, the first minute the guy's going, look, you got to practice your form before you start running. So do you feel like if is there any sense of like if someone were to just go out jogging without any kind of like, you know, preparation on the way they're running, like, can you speak to that at all?
Absolutely. I think we see that quite a bit. If you ride around any college campus or any metropolitan city, you're going to see people jogging, and you're going to see a plethora of jogging techniques. You see people all the time that might be a little too heavy to be going on a long distance jog, but they're going on a 5 or 6 mile jog when really they haven't worked up to that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of impact on the joints, especially the ankles, knees, hips, and lower back that's involved in long distance cardio that people don't really take into account that are either too heavy to do or don't have enough of a strength base to do. And I think there's a balance. It's got to be relative strength. I'm not saying that a 250-pound person can't go on a jog. There's plenty of 250-pound people that can go on jogs and do a great job and not get injured, but they also have the relative strength for their body mass to be able to handle that. Now, a person who's, you know, relatively weak at 250 pounds very well may get injured.
Right. I think when I was first working out, I didn't understand, like, why are there all these ab exercises? Like, I can do captain's chair, I can do plank, I can do, you know, incline sit-ups, regular sit-ups. You know, it's like, well, why don't I just do the best one every time? But the reason that you switch these up is because, you know, your body adapts to that specific movement. So, you get a benefit by doing these different activities in all different kinds of exercise, strength training, flexibility, cardio. So, that's sort of what you're talking about with these different kinds of training stimulus.
Right, absolutely. I think no matter what you're doing, you need a different stimulus. You look at a football player. You know, we don't have our linemen just hitting the blocking sled every single day. You know, they're going to be squatting and pressing and cleaning and running and doing a lot of different things to develop their overall craft, to develop the strength base for their craft. And I think you want to become an expert at what you do, and you want your body to become proficient at what you do, but you don't want to get totally accustomed to what you do that you don't have any more effect. And I think from a strength training standpoint, for example, kind of in what we do, we're not going to come in and heavy back squat every single day. One, we're probably going to get them hurt if we try to do that, because their central nervous system and their muscular system and skeletal system needs time to recover from a heavy stimulus. So you'd come in the next day and you may do kind of a flush of those particular areas of the body that you use, or you may use a lighter submaximal weight, training more for speed rather than a heavy stimulus. So you've got to alternate to keep your body fresh, and you've also got to give yourself an opportunity to recover from the heavy stimulus that you put on it.
Especially if you're sort of beginning a workout routine and you're stressing these muscles for the first time, it is easier on them to sort of stress different muscles even by just doing a different, you know, if you're going to do cardio 4 times a week, if you run twice and do a stationary bike twice, that means that those essentially like running muscles and bike muscles are both only stressed twice as opposed to one of them being stressed 4 times.
Right, absolutely. And I think, you know, let's say a person is starting a cardio program. Let's say that, you know, they don't have a very long stride. Maybe they're just doing kind of a trot. Well, if that person, let's say they're just now starting, they go for 30 minutes. Let's say it takes them 30 minutes to run 1 mile. Well, 1 mile is, what, 5,280 feet. So let's say that they don't have a very long stride. They're taking a short step. So let's say, just for numbers purposes, that person is taking 2,640 steps per foot per mile. Well, that's a lot of pounding on each leg for a 1 mile run for a person that's never exercised before, and you're going to turn around in 24 hours or less and do the exact same thing again.
Right, right.
And you've never trained before. I think you're asking for a stress fracture or a connective tissue injury. I think you're asking for soft tissue issue. I think you're asking for something like that if you've never trained.
Strength training has another huge benefit besides just helping us be strong enough to maintain an exercise routine without getting injured. As we discussed in episode 1, when you lose weight, you lose muscle mass. And resistance training helps retain muscle while you're losing weight. When you lose weight, you also lose quite a bit of muscle while you're losing weight. One way to prevent that is to do resistance training, like lifting weights. Is that something that you have seen or agree with?
Right. So we recommend that all the time, the resistance exercise. We recommend aerobic or cardio as well. But and we did a study here years ago where people lost about 20 pounds in about the same number of weeks. And then they did no three groups. One group didn't do any exercise. Another group did aerobic exercise. It was an aerobic dance class. And another group did resistance exercise. And so the people who did no exercise lost about 35% of their weight from muscle. The group that did aerobic exercise lost only about 20% of their weight from muscle, and the group that did resistance exercise alone lost only 8% of their weight from muscle. So,
wow.
Weight resistance exercise will certainly preserve muscle when you're losing weight. And again, if you could lose up to 35% of your weight from muscle, if you lose 100 pounds, you lose 35 pounds of muscle. That's a problem because muscle setting your metabolic rate. Well, not just setting it, but it's a big part of your metabolic rate. If you lose a lot of muscle, you're gonna slow your metabolic rate down. And the other thing is, you're just gonna be less strong. You'll be weaker. And strength is empowering. It gives you more self-confidence, and it permits you to do more exercise also if you're stronger. So it's always a good idea to do resistance exercise. And in our population of folks, who have very high BMIs, it's hard for them necessarily to walk or do things like that. Their knees hurt and so forth. Whereas
right.
resistance exercise, you can do it anywhere. You use exercise tubing or the bands, and you can do it at home. And so it's a good thing to be doing.
You might assume that since muscle mass burns calories, your weight loss plan could just be putting on a bunch of muscle. Some personal training programs will really try to sell you on this. I've heard the opposite of this, which is basically that when you you can put on a bunch of muscle and therefore increase your metabolic rate and turn your body into a fat burning machine, essentially. Obviously, if you were to put on 10, 20 pounds of muscle, that would jack up your metabolic rate. But can you talk a little bit about just the math of that as the primary means of weight loss? If your main way to lose weight was to say, I'm gonna put on a bunch of muscle?
Well, nobody's gaining 10 to 20 pounds of muscle. Some people are obviously bodybuilders and so forth, but that's a lot of muscle.
Right,
getting 20 pounds of muscle. So I am not aware of any studies or any of my own experience where you had somebody doing weightlifting only and they lost weight because they gained a lot of muscle. I'm not optimistic that would necessarily work. Again, nothing is definite and applies to everybody, but the overwhelming majority of the people, if you had them just do resistance exercise, they're not going to become fat-burning machines.
Essentially, putting on 10 pounds of muscle is very hard. It's even harder if you're on a calorie deficit already, and a pound of muscle burns, what you'd say, around 6 to 10 calories a day. So then you're
something like that. That's what the literature sort of suggests. Yeah.
So even after this mountainous amount of work to put on 10 pounds of muscle, you're really only adding 100 calories a day to your metabolic rate.
Something like that. Yeah. Yes. Something along those lines. I wouldn't swear by that exactly, but yes, you're right. And people are afraid also, they don't want to, and this is particularly true of women, they don't want to weightlift because they're going to gain 10 pounds of muscle and then they'll weigh more. And first of all, you're not going to gain 10 pounds of muscle. What will happen though, as you lose weight, if you're losing more weight from fat than muscle, you're going to change the percent of your body weight that's muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you did nothing, even if you gained no muscle mass at all, but you lost weight, automatically your percent of muscle mass is higher and the body fat is lower. So, that's a good combination. So if you're doing resistance exercise while you're losing weight, it's just a really good idea to do resistance exercise and not to worry about the 5 pounds of muscle that you might put on.
What?
Because even if you weigh more. I mean, it's 5 pounds of muscle. It's a good thing.
When I was first starting this process and I knew very little, I went to the gym and I had like a personal training consultant kind of thing. And they said, what are your goals? And I was like, oh, you know, I want to put on some muscle, but I don't want to get huge. And the guy said to me, if you saw the amount of work these guys put in, you would know how crazy that is. It's like saying, I want to try rock climbing, but I don't want to accidentally scale Mount Kilimanjaro.
It's an enormous amount of work. I mean, go into the gym and watch these guys work out, man. They are, you know, sweat and blood. I mean, they work out really hard, and it's, you know, that's tough. Now, these guys, you know, the professionals, so throughout the year, they will vary the amount of work they're doing, and, you know, their body weight and so forth will change, and their muscle mass will change. But for the average person, I mean, putting on 10 pounds of muscle, you're doing some work.
And if gyms love telling you that the way to lose weight is to build muscle, magazines love telling you that the way to get rid of pesky belly fat is to do sit-ups. I thought that people were aware of this, but I've just seen some people, you know, on Instagram, I think that have this kind of misconception, which is basically that if you have belly fat, you should do sit-ups. And that's sort of that whole spot training misconception. Could you just really briefly talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a very common misconception, because what people don't realize is you've automatically got abdominal muscle tissue. You've been basically training your abdominal muscle tissue since you were in the womb. Mm-hmm. Any movement that you do, you're using your spinal erectors, you're using your abdominal tissue. Just sitting up straight in a chair or slouching for that matter requires activation of your core. So everyone has ab muscles, and I think that there's this misconception about okay, well, if I train my abs more, then I'm going to be able to see them. Like I'm going to get my abs so big and strong that they're going to just push the fat out of the way, and you're going to see my abs. And that's not at all the case. You can definitely make your abs thicker. You can have them, you know, protrude a little more with certain exercises over a long period of time training. But if you want to see your abs, it's pretty much all nutrition. You've got to be able to cut some of that kind of subcutaneous fat, really, with any muscle group. You know, I'm going to do side bends and I'm going to get rid of my love handles. No, don't get rid of your love handles. You need to lose fat.
Interestingly, even though we've talked about why exercise doesn't help us lose much weight, exercise can help us maintain our weight. On the website, it says that exercise is actually a good way to maintain your weight as opposed to losing weight. Why is that?
The absolute reason for that isn't so clear. We look at a picture of the population and you see the people who are exercising more maintain their weight better. If you look at the data from the National Weight Control Registry, those people are exercising 5 or more days per week, walking up to an hour a day. I mean, on the face of it, it's obvious that, you know, they're burning calories while they're doing that, and it seems as though that's more important for maintenance of weight than it is for weight loss, most likely because they weigh less. So if they're exercising that much more than, you know, the calorie that, you know, if they're exercising 500 calories, that's a greater percentage of their metabolic needs than it is if they weigh more. So there's that. I am a big believer, and talk about this a lot in our program, that there's an interaction between your exercise and calorie intake and how you're feeling about yourself. And so, you know, if you're more active, it may be that it has an effect on what you eat. And I can tell you, because the other night even, I have this discussion with folks all the time, but the other night, and a woman said, you know, when she, you know, I asked the question, how many people understand or know about yourself what the interaction is between when you exercise and how many calories you consume and what you're eating is like? And this one woman said, when she's exercising regularly, she makes decisions that are different about what she eats. Now, there is a question of causality. Is she feeling good about herself and so she does that? Or is the exercise making her feel better? You know, that's harder to determine. But clearly there's an interaction, and I recommend that all people kind of get to understand what that interaction is. Because if it's true that the exercise is helping you feel better and maybe helping you make decisions that are more in line with keeping your weight off, then of course that's what's going to happen. So I think that's a really maybe overlooked point where why exercise helps. But I think those are probably the two main reasons: the calorie expenditure from the exercise and the psychological benefit of moving so much more.
this is a bit of conjecture on my part, but I think this whole episode shows why exercising is better for maintaining weight than losing it. Exercising enough to create a 500-calorie deficit at your heaviest weight every day seems impossibly hard and likely to lead to injury, not to mention being even more difficult since you're hungry. But adding 150 calories of cushion and boosting your mood by having a regular exercise routine once you're at the weight you want to be and are eating enough food for your body seems infinitely more manageable and incredibly helpful. Any amount of exercise you can work into your routine is phenomenal. Resistance training to build muscle by lifting weights or doing body exercises is the best place to start if you don't exercise already, not only to prevent injury, but to keep yourself from losing muscle while you're losing weight. And if you have the willpower to add in cardio or stretching or just a little walking, that's great too. But it's also okay if you don't. In episode 3, we'll talk about why losing weight is such a drain on our willpower and how we can make it easier on ourselves, not only while we're losing weight, but after we switch to maintenance.
Campfire.